want to start by welcoming everyone to the Reagan Red Zone. For those of you listening, we are coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia today. We've spent the last day and a half with 200 of the top leaders and top firms in our industry discussing really some high-level issues, opportunities, challenges, and really a celebration of what a great industry and what a great business this is. We are excited to end today with our last session, which is the Reagan Red Zone, and really appreciate all of you joining us today. Not only is the live audience recording a first in Red Zone history, we also are excited to welcome our first ever special guest. Coming to us straight from Madison, Wisconsin, we have the CEO of M3 Insurance, Mike Victorson. Mike Victorson is like the coach whose locker room pep talk never gets old. And we are thrilled to have him and his perspective joining us today.
Appreciate you having me, and I also appreciate you assisting my humility level by having me follow a guest of like Dan Glaser on the stage.
Yes.
Really appreciate that.
Also joining me today in the Red Zone are our CEO, Kevin Stipe, as well as Brian McNeely, a partner with our firm. Guys, welcome. We are going to start out today with a couple of reflections on 2 years ago. When we sat up here in front of you all, we made some predictions about the market, about the industry. We're going to see if we were right, if we were wrong, and how you all felt about these issues 2 years ago. The first question, I'll read this for our listeners, where is M&A activity in 2024? Again, this question was asked in April of 2022. 9% said still rising. 43% said steady at current levels, which was around 1,000 deals per year. If you remember, 2021 was a huge peak in M&A activity in our industry. 45% said down from current levels, and 4% said down materially. Well, the results are in, and I'll ask you guys to weigh in. M&A deal levels went down. 2022 was 639 total deals. 2023 was 555 total announced deals in the industry. Guys, any reactions to that?
Well, I think as we very presciently understood that it was going to fall, and it did fall, and it fell almost to the level where nobody in the room would have believed that it was going to go that low. Not quite there, but only 4% said it was going to get down to 500, which is pretty amazing. And disappointing in some respects.
Sure. Same side. Let's look at pricing. Second question, 2 years ago, what will M&A pricing do over the next 24 months? 20% said increase, 46% remained flat, 34% decreased moderately. Mac, what do you think here?
Well, I said increase, so I'm glad to see I was right.
There was a slight increase. There was a slight increase over the last 2 years.
I think we need to roll the tapes from 2 years ago. I'm not sure that's what you were saying,
Eeyore. Where is Brock? Is Brock here?
No, he went to the bathroom. Left.
But he reminded me last night, he's like, when are you going to get credit for making all the correct predictions last year?
Uh-huh. So. Okay, good.
No, but I think it's the supply and demand that we talked about at length yesterday, and just how that's created and a need for people to continue to do deals to drive prices up.
Great. So this is where we're going to ask you all, the audience, to participate. You should have already done this yesterday, but we're going to use the Slido polling technology again. And guys, you're going to be on the record here. So when we're sitting here 2 years from now in April of 2026, we'll be reflecting on some of these predictions. For those of you out there, the way the Red Zone works is we do four downs. Each down is a question. So I'm just going to lead into it with our first down here. Please wait to vote until after they get done debating the issue. That's the format we're going to follow. The first down question for our panelists today, what is the biggest threat to brokers in the next 2 years? Now, Kevin was going to say disintermediation, but Dan Glaser just told you that's not going to happen. So Kevin's out on this question. Mac, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at this list, a lot of these factors we've already talked about.
Hold your votes. Let them debate first.
But I like where this trend is going. So I would agree that the softening market and its impact on organic growth, as well as its impact on profitability, is going to be the lead story next time we're together. It's a cyclical market. It's eventually going to happen. All these other things, interest rate, economy, tax legislation, president, we've been through much bigger things than that as an industry. Came through them really well. But the softening market profitability issues are going to have the most direct impact in my mind.
Great. Let's hear from maybe someone who's an actual broker in the market every day.
You're almost right. You're almost right. It is going to have an impact, but I, you know, brokers in our industry follows the economy first and foremost. And anybody that's at this conference especially, and especially if they're advised by Reagan, they're investing in their shop and they can overcome a softening market with great sales velocity. Truly, I believe that the economy and then also what happens with interest rates, meaning we may have less investable capital or more expensive capital to deploy, is going to have the biggest impact on growth for us, more so even than softening rates. You almost got that right.
Close.
Yeah.
If the host is allowed to have an opinion, my thought on this would be the talent piece. We've talked a lot about in the last 2 days, making recruiting a core competency of your firm. And I think there is a threat out there that if you aren't strategic and intentional and investing in your talent recruiting and development efforts, that that could be a real problem, especially if some of these other outside factors outside of your control start to come true.
And as a guest and following Coach Saban, that was a pretty awesome segment you had here at the conference. Probably more to come on that later with our group. Always the biggest threat to brokers is themselves. Now, that's not going to necessarily get reported in a headline, but if any of us get ever comfortable with the business, much like what Coach talked about with his program, that is always our biggest threat.
Great. Let's hear from you, the audience. Votes are coming in now. So far, about 50% of the room believes interest rates and the economy are the biggest threat. 30% softening market.
Fascinating that the presidential election is zero. I guess it's just going to be bad. Just how bad?
Everyone's just resigned to that fact. Great. Second down. 2 years from now, what will be the most noteworthy M&A headline? Let's get a little spicy here. We've got a couple options to consider. Kev?
Who's going first?
Mac?
You want to go first?
I was right on this one last time, so I'll go first. But I think it will be really a combination of two of these. One is that more top firms go public. We've talked about they're just not going to have any other options. But also we talked about at length yesterday about getting too big. What are your options? Can you continue to scale that mountain, get to $1 billion? So I think there's also more firms come together and more large brokers join forces.
But don't you see the question? It says the most noteworthy. It's singular,
reading,
not plural.
Is optional.
All right, I'm going to actually go out on a limb here. I think a top broker's going to implode. And let me, though, redefine implode. This does not mean like disappear and scatter and all that.
He's going to make up his own definition.
Make up a reasonable definition of implosion. I do think there is a real possibility that we're going to hit a harder economic patch than folks are expecting. Whether that's interest rate driven or whether it's black swan driven, this is good news in a sense for brokers, and that brokers do pretty well in down economies. So I don't think this is a real pessimistic message for brokers. But there has been a musical chairs game being played with debt levels with certain brokers. And it is possible that if we saw a sharper downturn or we did see higher interest rates, as was one of the things discussed yesterday, we could see a real hardship situation with a broker that wouldn't cause, again, this total implosion, but would cause them in a distressed situation to have to go into the arms of somebody else. And I think it's pretty likely we'll see that over the next couple of years.
Anything you'd add?
I mean, I don't disagree. I think the likelihood of that is much less just because of the resilience. It's really hard to screw up this business. So I think
anybody can do it. Okay, all right.
Smoking like a consultant. Just listen to Reagan. Everything will be okay. No, sorry.
Audience has it coming in at over 50% believe in a merger or further consolidation at the top end of the market. Something you certainly hear a lot about these days, both in the press and in kind of the rumor mill of the industry. Third down. Third down. We often talk about the fountain effect, whereby there is a steady emergence and replenishment of firms in the industry. According to the Future One study, which we've referenced a couple times this week, there has been zero reduction in the number of agencies over the past 20 years. I believe it was from 2002 to 2022. Do you believe, guys, that this level of replenishment will continue in the industry?
No, it will not. Replenishment will continue, but not at the pace that we've had. And one of the things we talked about yesterday is nationwide in 2020, and then Allstate a few years prior to that, and one or two others, moved from captive agents into the independent channel. And so what happened is there was a real influx. I think nationwide it was like 11,000 agents flooded the independent channel. And that has replenished a lot of what was gone, albeit at a much slower, lower level than we'd had historically. I think the part of replenishment that we tend to think about is when a firm gets acquired and then one or two or three people jump out of that, start a new firm, and do something like that. That's a much smaller part of the historical replenishment. I think we'll see that, or maybe even a little bit more of that, but that's a smaller piece of it. I do think we'll see the decline of agency numbers over the next few years.
Yeah, if I could jump in on that one, Kevin, especially with that last ad, you're 100% correct from my perspective. You won't have the macro replenishment, but if you think about the demographic change that's happening in the country, and there were some statistics even quoted during the conference, whether it's you measure it 3 or 5 years from now or 7 years from now, millennials and Gen Z will be up to 72% of the workforce. That group is going to birth new firms into our industry. Some of those people were a part of an acquisition and maybe they didn't have an equity event. Some of those folks tried a different career, just like we heard on stage or like when we heard from Pat Gallagher, what a tremendous story this industry is and what an opportunity they have. I do believe demographics matter. I think even you all would agree with that at Reagan. And we're going to have one of the most seismic demographic shifts in our economy in the next 5 to 7 years we've had in the last 25 or 30. And that's going to ripple through this industry. And so I think in that segment, we will see replenishment, which might mean for people in the room, actual certifiable type of competitors we have to deal with. Most in the room wouldn't think of a nationwide agency, with all due respect to nationwide agents, coming onto the scene as an independent, as a formidable competitor in your market. But if 3 or 4 or 5 people left one of your best competitors and started a new competitor, I think you'd think of it as a threat that you have to understand and deal with and then now compete with.
Yeah, you know, for us, I think at Reagan, when we think about deepening relationships with firms, but also building relationships with new firms, it's such a joyful day when you get introduced to or meet a firm and they're 25 million and we've never heard of them. And it happens more than you think, and it's a wonderful thing. And it's not because we're not out in the market working on those relationships, but it's just a testament to how it's been replenishing and how quickly a firm can be 5 million and the next day they're 25 million and they're really a market leader in their area and they're on your radar. And that's just it's a wonderful day in the industry for that. So the audience, overwhelmingly, 80% say no more replenishment at this level.
At the same level. That's
which
right.
is harmful that you're agreeing with Kevin that much.
Well, he worded the question to get the answer.
Reading the question.
He's answering his own questions is what he's doing. Fourth down. We just talked about AI with Bobby and Dan Glaser. When it comes to evaluating the potential impact of AI technology on our industry, do you all lean towards, and we're just picking two camps here, AI skeptic or AI alarmist? Are you Bill Gates or are you Elon Musk? And where do you see these opportunities for brokers?
Isn't there three on that answer?
The third one is one that, yeah, I think that you probably want to jump on right now.
I do. I do believe this is an offensive moment appropriately for our firm. Not trying to mix metaphors too poorly here, but everyone's probably watched a basketball game when somebody hits 2, 3, maybe 4 threes in a row. And then it's the heat check shot. And it's a horrible shot. And they shouldn't have taken the shot. But the only reason why they did it is because they made 3 in a row. I think firms in the room and in our industry are going to experience where AI can help them play offense. And it'll help them lean in, make investment, maybe recruit people to their firm that they've never had before. And it's going to be a really exciting day. And we can't forget that this is not the place for a heat check. Because there's going to be disclosures to customers, internal SOX efforts that you have to do, and making sure that you take good care of all of the information you're entrusted with as we all think of ourselves and are a fiduciary for our customers. So let's make 3 threes in a row. Let's go on offense. But let's avoid the heat check.
Yeah, so I kind of agree. And that is,
that's, you know, it. I feel good about that.
I mean, I think AI is certainly going to change the world around us, and it's going to change business, it's going to change our industry. But I think it's whatever M3 can do, firm over here in Atlanta is going to be able to do, because that solution is going to be available to them too.
There is an aspect of catch, for sure.
That, so it's, you know, it's going to have a huge impact, but it's going to largely be impact everybody the same amount. There's, you're not going to be able to create a competitive advantage with AI, in my mind.
I'll just add, in the AI breakout yesterday, which was, I thought that was fantastic, he brought up the example of Excel when it was invented back in the late 80s, and how the accounting profession was freaking out because they were immediately kind of forecasting that the accounting profession was going to basically go out of business, and that you were going to so automate what accountants had traditionally done that it was doomsday for the accounting industry. And then you fast forward like 25 years, and the accounting industry is enormous. And one of the really cool things that happened out of that was actually job enrichment, not job undermining, for so many professionals. And it was like, now the mundane tasks that were so, you know, that tied them up so badly, now they could separate from that, kind of get heads up, and actually strategically advise clients. And it's my hope for AI that that's what happens here. And where I think going on offense is really cool is if the projections are right about how you could really create unique, compelling efficiencies here, and see productivity for brokers go from 250,000 in revenue per employee to 500,000. There's a lot of neat resources that could replace the more traditional spend on just the basic blocking and tackling that could be really cool, especially for those in our industry that are really at the top end of the consulting heap. And I think it's really an exciting development in that respect.
Well, and this is encouraging to see. The audience agrees that over 80% say go on offense, not even avoid or totally avoiding the skeptic or alarmist and really thinking about it proactively, which is great.
I would just add, I was an auditor at one point. Excel didn't make it any more exciting or fun. It was still terrible.
But you still left the profession. So,
right. So there was a flag on the play, apparently. We've got a bonus down here that we're going to be able to get out. A major trend over the past 5 years is the incredible growth of the E&S market and the surge of business placed through the wholesale channel. I'm sure many of you have experienced this. If the market does soften, how do you see the overall dynamic between retailers, wholesalers, and even carriers evolving over the next 5 years?
I think this is just an absolutely fascinating thing that's happened in such a macro and quiet way in our industry in the last 5 years. What our insurance companies have outsourced to wholesalers with things that they used to insure, what brokers from the largest of the large to the smallest that can get a contract now outsource in terms of technical expertise and also access to product that allows them to go win. It's been astounding to see the growth in this industry, I think, in the last 5 years. And I do believe in all ends of the value chain, it's a form of outsourcing, especially as that labor force changes in America, like we referenced before. Historically, when markets soften, business gets pulled back into shops and away from wholesalers because commissions get squeezed. I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen. If people have good organic growth engines and they can continue to source new relationships, I don't think this is going to change much. But this dynamic, I think, is going to also play itself out in terms of, like, when we had Jeff up here talking from Brown and Riding, the quality of the relationship and the quality of the broker at the wholesaler and the relationships they have with us certainly are going to drive, I think, their continued ability to grow. I just think this is going to be a fascinating thing to watch over the next 5 years. I don't think anybody can exactly predict it. But what a massive segment of the industry this has become, sometimes right under our eyes without even spending much time thinking about it.
Great. Anything to add to the bonus down?
We'll have to watch and see.
Great. If you follow the Red Zone, and I know all of you do, we always end with our 2-minute drill, which is our version of a lightning round. We've got two questions here. to wrap this up. The first one, and for our listeners at home, as you've heard referenced yesterday, we had Coach Nick Saban as a guest speaker talking about leadership. So, gentlemen, when it comes to leadership, what is the most applicable thing you heard from Coach Saban yesterday?
Happy to start on this. We had a fantastic conversation at dinner last night that kind of morphed into processing what he had talked about. And I'm going to fuse together two things that he talked about that I think are the most applicable thing that I heard. At the first one being a little bit expected from somebody like Coach Saban, who's kind of legendary for the amount of kind of play-to-play self-discipline that he preaches. And he talked about the self-discipline that you've got to have, and you've got to have a plan in place and a process for reinforcing your self-discipline every day. And so that part was kind of expected. The other part that was unexpected to me was how much he talked about culture. Because I never, with him storming the sidelines and angry all the time during games, I'm like, nah, I don't think he's the culture guy. But when he explained how he approached players, and specifically how his goal was to allow them to accomplish their self-proclaimed goals in life, and how he drew the distinction between getting people to do what they need to do for your benefit as the coach versus thinking about what they need for their benefit in terms of developing. And I was just thinking how hard it is to do that. Like, it's easy to be selfish, at least for me. It's easy to be selfish, and it's hard daily to think about others and what's best for them. And when I combine these two principles, it's like I need to be more disciplined, because I think this is a discipline of thinking consistently about what is best for somebody else, like for our employees or for our clients, consistently putting those shoes on. And his point was, if you do that, you'll win. But if you focus on winning, it won't work. And I thought that was just a really insightful thing. So discipline and putting yourself in the other person's shoes, doing what's best for them. That was awesome.
Yeah, I had, first he didn't say anything negative about Auburn, so I was able to pay attention.
but he had a good record against him.
He did. But I'd heard it before coming into the event, but it's kind of like going to a concert. You want to hear the band sing the song. When he talks about high achievers don't like average people or mediocre people. But at the same time, mediocre and average people don't like high achievers. And you kind of got to get rid of the people, the low achievers, the mediocre people, and focus on the high achievers. I think that's a fantastic message.
The two big things I took, the first is that he transformed me in my mind to 6'3", 240, and it just made me want to go out and play a game. And so I think good leaders have an ability to do that, to sub 6 foot, 180 pound people. But the second thing, though, that he said, it was staring all of us right in the face. And I think it's one of those most obvious things that he spent time on. But I think if we reflect in our firms, we walk past it every day. He said, coach them up. Coach them up. And if we inspect what we expect back in our firms, how often are we truly, or our team, coaching up people? We expect and think about outcomes, and he spent a lot of time talking about that. And many times we're infrastructure challenged, or maybe we don't have enough managers, if you will. But lots of people can be tapped on the shoulder to coach them up. And it is going to be, for me at least, the big thing that I'm going to take back to M3 to talk about with our group, about all the opportunities you see. Hey, coaches coach, players play. And in coaching people up, as he probably has learned, you respect and honor the player. I'm not the one trying to make the tackle, so I'm not going to pretend to be that person. But I am going to coach you up and reflect your goals and dreams and hopes back to you and ask you, what do you think needs to happen next? That was a very powerful part of what he talked about yesterday for me.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, we know that leadership in today's business environment is not easy, and we hope all of you got some good takeaways from Coach yesterday. Last question as we punch this in the end zone there. What is the biggest strategic opportunity for brokers over the next 5 years? We are very bullish and optimistic on this industry, and we want to send you off in that way. So, guys, bring it home here.
So I'll just start real quick and then we can kick it down the road. I truly believe our industry still is very average at raising up talent and teaching them the business. I think we leave a lot to chance. I think we leave a lot to people who've got multiple jobs. I've got to book a business and I'm also asked to mentor and teach the business. I think the huge opportunity for brokers, when you think about that demographic shift in the workforce, not just the buyer, but our shops, is how do we get really curious and ask a ton of questions about where we can spend time and money inside of our firm giving new people a track and a plan to be successful. What can work for Pat, he talked about we're gonna hire 500 interns and 125 hopefully are gonna make it in a few years. When you're potentially of a certain scale, you can just let that natural selection process play out. At a place like M3, I don't have that luxury. And so we are gonna be spending a lot of time as an example, and I think this is a huge area for the next 5 years for every single firm, because you're gonna experience the same demographic shifts that are happening in the marketplace.
Similar, I would think, is the ability to attract, retain young people. I mean, there's gonna be such a huge opportunity for young people just to come in the business and just kind of be handed a book of business. I mean, I've told a number of folks, if I were just starting my career, I might think of going to be a bond broker. All those people are 120 years old. And,
they'll still kick your, I mean, they'll still right, work hard against you.
Right, but that's, I mean, those relationships last forever. So, that's just one area where it's a great opportunity for somebody to come in that's smart and take over and just seize the opportunity. So selling that opportunity and attracting folks is a tremendous opportunity.
I hate when people echo each other, so I'll keep this really short. But I do think the next generation investment and leaning into that. I'll tell you, we've watched several of you get materially younger through internship programs, and the Pat Gallagher comment about 500 interns a year, that was amazing. We've done that ourselves, and it's fascinating. By this summer, when we have some more young folks start, our median age as a company will be 31. And that is, I mean, you compare that with 10 years ago. We've gone through the same transformation that many of you folks have. And aside from all the things it does for you, it is so much more fun organizationally to have a bunch of young people running around. I mean, it just brings energy every day. And so it's not just what it does for the business, it's what it does for your people and your culture, and the enjoyment of being there every day is just huge. I think that's a great opportunity out there.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today here in the Red Zone, and for our millions of listeners around the world, thank you for joining us as well. And what you can't see is just the rousing standing ovation that we're getting here in this room right now. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.